And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we're talking just a couple of days before Election Day. Tuesday coming is Election Day.
Primary election.
Primary election day. But for many parts of Pennsylvania, the primary is the election. I mean, we have so many gerrymandered legislative districts. State senatorial, state representative districts are gerrymandered. Although this is not an election in which we have a lot of those kind of candidates running.
You know, before you even go any farther on the gerrymander, you know that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court stepped in and ungerrymandered the congressional districts a couple years ago.
Some years ago, right.
Yeah, they didn't touch the legislature. And there was a report, because what happens is that there's a committee put together that does that. And it's got two Democrats and two Republicans. And if they can't agree on a fifth, then the Supreme Court steps in. And they, a week or two ago, the Supreme Court did step in, and they nominated the chancellor from, I believe it's the University of Pittsburgh, to be the fifth person on that. So we'll see where they come out on these legislative districts.
Now, nobody has to approve that, right? It's whatever they do, that group decides who the fifth person should be.
That's correct.
Do we know what the politics of that fifth person is?
Well, I'd have to think that it's Democratic leaning. It's certainly not going to be this terrible partisan gerrymandering the Republicans have done. So they're going to get it may be, you know, just to be down the middle. It would be a big improvement. It would mean that the Republicans are going to lose legislature votes or districts. And of course, then they'll also have to do the congressional districts again. And that where that's big is the fact that Pennsylvania is going to lose a seat. So some seat is going to be gone. We think it's going to be gone out west, but we're not sure. Excuse me. Excuse me again. If that's the case, it could involve Connor Lamb's district, which is why he's making noise about running for the Senate nomination. Or it could be one of these, they've talked about Dan Musser's district that touches our area to the south, and we'll have to see about that. So there are a lot of ramifications there. There are a lot of ramifications. As Musser's making noise about running for governor or Senate as well. So
so he's anticipating getting knocked out.
He's anticipating he could be one of them, but I think the consensus is that the seat's going to be lost in the West, because the West has been losing population and the East has been gaining population.
Well, before we go on to that, let me just ask you about what we're actually voting for on Tuesday. There are actually three amendments to the Constitution. And as far as I can see, the Republican Party has been extremely active in promoting a yes vote on the first two. The Democrats laggard behind, of course. They've been promoting, to the extent they've been doing anything, they've been promoting a no vote. What do you know about these propositions?
Yeah, well, this is something that the Republicans all throughout the country have been doing, where you've had Democratic governors who have put in emergency edicts about the pandemic and have closed businesses down or required masks and what have you. And our governor, Tom Wolf, has done the same thing. The legislature wanted to open up last year for Easter type of things. And they've resented the fact that the governor has foiled their attempts to open things up and further spread the virus. So they're putting in an amendment that would strip the governor of his ability to do more than effectively one gubernatorial edict on emergency powers, and put that power into the legislature. Of course, you know, the legislature isn't always in session. The legislature doesn't always agree, even among the parties. It's a unwieldy type of way to do emergency proclamations that affect everybody's lives. But they're pushing this much like they're pushing everything else that didn't work out for them. It would have worked fine if they had a Republican governor, but since they have a Democratic governor, they're against things. And what they've done this year is there are four constitutional amendments, or four ballot questions, three constitutional amendments, and then a ballot question about funding for bonds on volunteer fire companies. But the third question involves an equal rights question. I don't even know why it's on the ballot, because Pennsylvania does have a very strong equal rights or civil rights law on the books. But so they've said, everybody vote yes on all three. And the first two are really a question of separation of powers issue, and the third one is nobody's really opposing anyway. And as you said, the Democrats have done nothing really to defend, and I'm surprised the governor hasn't led an effort to do anything promote voting against the first two constitutional amendments. So we'll see what happens. And, I think it depends on, you know, where the vote comes out and whether people pay attention to it. My daughter got an absentee ballot, and I saw what it looked like. And in our area, it's a very long ballot, and the constitutional amendments are at the very end of it. People may not even go all the way down and vote on this thing. And, you know, in the big city in Philadelphia, which has a very hot race for district attorney, I don't know how far down on the ballot that is. You know, we had a big drop off for the Democrats in 2020 below the presidential race. So I don't think it bodes well for the Democrats in terms of fighting these amendments, although the natural inclination of a lot of voters is to go against some of these amendments. We'll just have to see what happens.
It's interesting that the Republicans, the corporate party, party that's always prided itself on representing business. Business in America, of course, is a top-down affair. The boss makes decisions. There's no shop democracy in American business, right? Your foreman tells you what to do. His manager tells him what to do. The head of the company tells him what to do.
Right.
So all of a sudden, these corporatists who champion that system have decided that no, the executive head of the government should not decide executive matters. The legislature should. Legislatures which, by and large, deadlock all the time and never can come to decisions in time. These are supposed to be bodies that can handle hurricanes, which come up in a couple of days. If you don't solve it in a couple of days, you don't solve it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a solution. A solution in search of a real problem.
Well, but it speaks to the general attack by the Trump people against the ability of government to intervene on behalf of people. It says you can't do it. You can't trust them. Don't let them even get involved.
Yeah. Well, there certainly is a Trumpist tinge to this. However. There's also that thing that we've talked about incessantly over the years, and that is this notion, and we're starting to see more and more being written about it, that the Republicans feel only they have the right to govern. You've heard me mention this time and time again. So, for instance, in North Carolina, when the Democrat won for governor, the Republican legislature, in a veto-proof legislature, immediately went in and stripped him of his powers in many aspects. In Wisconsin, after Scott Walker got beat for re-election, the Republican-dominated legislature, which by the way, is dominant because of the gerrymandering that they put in. They went in and they stripped the governor of a lot of powers. Kansas, the same thing happened. When Democrats win governorships and there's a Republican legislature, the legislature steps in and seeks to limit the governor's ability to function. And this is no different, except as you pointed out, there's a lot of Trumpist to this idea, because Trump wanted everything to stay open to make what he thought it would make him look good, rather than have the people understand the real effects of the virus that he allowed to get out of hand.
Yeah, the real effects were that 550,000 people died, most of whom didn't need to die.
Right, because he lied.
Because he
lied.
It. He didn't prepare people. And he's incompetent.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Playing golf is not the same thing as running the government. He didn't realize that there was actually a job involved.
Well, we heard, I don't know if you remember, when they were talking to John Kasich about possibly being a running mate, and he sent over, I think, Don Jr. or somebody from his staff.
No, it was his son-in-law. It was Jared,
I'm sorry. Yeah. And said to Kasich, you know, we want you to run the government, basically, because Kasich had wide experience both legislatively and executive. And Kasich said, well, what's the president going to be doing? And the reply was, he's going to be making America great again.
By the way, that's what happened. I mean, in the end, that's what happened. But it wasn't Kasich who ran the government, but it also wasn't Trump who ran the government.
And it wasn't the vice president who ran the government.
No.
It wasn't Mike Pence. It was nobody ran the government except a bunch of these crazy bureaucrats.
Well, you had guys like Stephen Miller who ran the government. For a time, you had Sebastian Gorka who helped run the government. You had Steve Bannon running the government.
Who didn't believe in government.
Yeah, none of them believed in government.
Then my idea is to destroy the state. And the cabinet secretaries who were, by and large, corrupt, doing things for their own well-being, and you still might see some criminal charges coming out on that on some of these fellows. But that was his thing, and that's still the doubling down. The GOP continues to double down on Trumpism. Trump lost the popular vote twice, the second time by more than twice as many votes as he lost it the first time. They lost the House, they lost the Senate, and they're still saying this is the road that we want to go on. They can't get away from it because he has this appeal for what they really are interested in, and that's discriminating against minorities and maintaining a power structure of people who are not going to be the majority of people anymore. In the United States.
But even today, they're not the majority. They are a minority of the people. And the Trumpists are a small minority. They've got a 30% share of the Republican Party, of the Republican Party.
Yeah. This week, a couple of things have emerged in you mentioned Election Day. We have a couple of hot races in Lackawanna County. We have a race for state Senate. To make an interim because the state senator from Lackawanna, the only Democrat north of I-80 to be a state senator, resigned in the middle of his term, and there has to be an interim elected to fill out the term. And this week, we got an endorsement from Joe Biden on that race. Now, you don't often see an endorsement of a president in a state legislative race. You see it for
In a primary.
In a primary, no less. But of course, the primary is the race, because there's not going to be any race in November. They don't have to run again. Let me stand corrected. They may have to run again on that, but this is I don't think so. I think this fills out the whole term. Anyway, we're wondering what that means. Does it mean that Marty Flynn, the Democratic candidate, feels he's in trouble and wants someone to come in? Or does it mean that the president, who, by the way, he does, you know, this is his home district, this is where he was born, so he does have some interest in the race, but does he feel like Marty's a winner and I want to back a winner? It's hard to believe that his political handlers would let him get involved in a state legislative race that the Democrat could lose in. We don't know if that's in, but they've been running ads. Both sides have been running ads that have centered, attacking each other. But in the last week or two, the ads have gotten to be more nationalized. The Republicans start talking about ads about and mentioning that Chris Chermak and Trump, putting Chermak and Trump together, and now the Democrats have run an ad attacking Chermak for being with Trump. So we're seeing that.
So this state Senate race is being nationalized. But we have a judge's race in Lackawanna County, yeah, also nationalized in a certain weird way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, interestingly, the judge's race is people cross-file. They can run as both Democrats or Republicans. We have two Democrats. So all three names are on both sides of the ballot. And there are two Democrats. There's Mary Walsh Dempsey, who's highly qualified, and Paul Ware, who's highly qualified. And then you have, on the Republican side, Nisha Arora, who most lawyers don't know and haven't had a lot of dealings with, and she's a Republican. And up to 2 weeks ago, none of her ads or none of her billboards and numerous...
She's got signs everywhere.
Yeah, but none of them mentioned she's a Republican. And all of a sudden, she started making an ad, putting out a TV ad stating that she's a Republican. And not only that, but then she put out an ad saying that she's a constitutional conservative. Now, this is a race for common pleas court. There are very few times...
What does that court handle?
Well, I was going to say, there are very few times in my career that I've ever had to cite the Constitution in local court. First of all, most of the cases the court handles are family law disputes. So there's no constitutional issues there. And all the new judges start in family court. That's the way they work through the system. You might get some real estate disputes. There's no constitutional issues there. Civil cases that some of them, eventually bump up to. Julia Munley just got bumped up to civil cases, but she's been an experienced civil litigator. There's no constitutional questions that come up in civil litigation. You know, the red car hit the blue car. There's nothing there that you have to, worry about. Or I fell on an icy patch that someone didn't clean in the wintertime. There's no constitutional questions there. In criminal law, there are some criminal procedure questions, but they're all settled law. The Miranda rule is well settled. Speedy trial rules are well settled. There's nothing there that is new under the Constitution. There might be occasionally a due process matter, but being a constitutional conservative means virtually nothing in terms.
Well, no, it means everything. It means her saying, "Look, fellas, I'm the Trump guy in this campaign."
Yeah, I mean, that's what it means there, but I'm talking about it in terms of the work of the courts. It means nothing.
Right.
So we've seen that.
But getting back to the Flynn race, the Scranton Times didn't endorse Flynn. That Scranton Times is a Democratic paper.
Right.
They didn't endorse Flynn.
Right.
Who'd they endorse?
They endorsed the Green Party candidate, who nobody talked about until... just about the time that you had to get your name on the ballot, Marlene Sebastianelli. Now, the Sebastianellis are a well-known family in the Mid-Valley, and she's a businesswoman. She's involved. She owns a winery. Her family owns a winery, and the Mid-Valley is a heavily Democratic area.
She is a very committed, dedicated, and active environmentalist.
Yeah.
When we in Susquehanna County were fighting the people who were trying to install a toxic waste incinerator in the county, she helped out, even though she's in Lackawanna County. But she helped out. She gave us a lot of moral support.
Right. And she would be the only Green Party candidate in the state Senate. I think the only one in the state legislature entirely. And I'm sure she would caucus with the Democrats, or I'm pretty sure she would caucus with the Democrats.
She's no Republican.
No. But so see whether she's going to hurt Marty Flynn enough. Marty is.
But why did the Scranton Times do that? That's very interesting, right? They're not environmentalists. They're not green people.
Well, they're not the landfall, the landfill people either. They've been against that. But you have to go back. Marty Flynn, they don't think he's been, you know, very well qualified. They don't think he's been, you know, a shining bulb in terms of intellect and things like that. And they, when they interviewed Chris Chermak, they found out that he knew even less than Marty Flynn. Now, Flynn has been
That's
around.
That's a very low bar not to be able to pass.
No, whatever. I mean, Marty's been around for 10 years in the legislature. He knows his way around there, and he has improved. But, you know, he's not going to be a leader in the state Senate. John Blake really knew what he was doing in the state Senate. But Chermak knows virtually nothing about that. Matter of fact, some of the things that he's talked about are just nonsense because they don't even come up. And he ducked the debate. He ducked the debate.
Well, if you don't know anything, it's better not to debate.
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody asked him where he stood on taking away people's votes like the state legislature wanted to do after the Biden election in Pennsylvania. But Sebastian Ely came across very well and very she's a bright woman, and they chose her. We'll see what happens.
She's a lot like Paige Cognetti in that sense, another bright woman.
Yeah, who's running into the nativist problem there. Her opponent, John Murray, talks about he's a Scranton native. You know, one of the criticisms of Scranton, Lackawanna County, is that, you know, we're very insular and insulated, and that we don't like outsiders or outside ideas. And a lot of people feel that that's been the downfall. Paige Cognetti's been a breath of fresh air. So, but that race, Marty Flynn is hoping will help him because it'll bring a bigger Democratic turnout. It might help Marlene Sebastianelli because the women's vote might come out and support her. So we'll have to see what happens there.
When we're talking about the state legislature, I can't forget somebody that you brought to my attention who's a state senator from one of the typically gerrymandered rural counties centered around Gettysburg, a fellow named Doug Mastriano, mm-hmm. who made a speech last week calling for making sure that the United States resumed its standing as a Christian nation. I missed when it was that church and state were united in the American Constitution. Maybe you could explain to me when that happened. I don't recall.
Well, there's a pseudo-historian by the name of David Barton who's been pushing this theory for a long time. But you do see it in right-wing circles, and in white supremacy circles. But not everybody that pushes this is a white supremacist. But it's a Christian supremacist notion, a Christian nationalist notion that's gained strength over the years. Part of it comes from the evangelical movement. Part of it comes from more of the fringe there. There were a lot of people on January 6th who were Christian nationalists. If you remember when they took over the state Senate, the first thing that we had is the shaman offered a prayer. And you see this, that they...
Well, also in Charlottesville, weren't they marching around? Wasn't the whole point of that demonstration, the Jews shall not replace us?
Yeah, yeah. That sort of thing. But their ideas are that, you know, this supremacy issue and an appealing to people's base feelings about religion, and it's gained some momentum over the years. It's telling people what they'd like to hear, not what they need to hear, the idea of separation of church and state. But, you know, that's always been a thread in America. It was one of the things that energized the right back in the 60s when the Supreme Court took a prayer out of public schools, said you can't have sectarian prayers in public schools. And that enraged people because, of course, they only want their kind of prayer, you know. You tell them, well, we're going to have a Muslim prayer, and all of a sudden, no. But if you, but if you tell them that they have a Christian prayer and it's their brand of Christianity, then it's a whole different ball game.
Now, you know, Doug Mastriano would be just to me, would be just a pimple on the ass of history of that kind of significance. But the thing about him is that before he became a state senator from this jerkwater district, he taught strategy at the United States Army War College for several years. This guy is an ex-Army Marine and a strategist. Not only did he help draw up strategy, he taught strategy for the U.S. Army. Now, the U.S. Army right now is confronted with a terrific political problem. They've got an infiltration in all the ranks of this extreme right-wing nationalism, American conservative Christian jingoist ideology, really proto-fascist ideology. And you can see it. If guys like this are tolerated as teachers of strategy, they're the ones training the troops. What do you expect?
Yeah, you know, the Air Force has had this problem for years at Colorado Springs, that they had a Christian supremacist bent to them. And that had to be weeded out so much. Once you invoke religion, there's no higher power.
There's no higher power. That's right. And whether it's the Christians, by the way, have some history of killing people in the name of religion over the last 1,000 years.
Yeah.
The Muslims have a way to go before they catch up to what the Christians managed.
Yeah, but we've seen this. You know, and there's an undertow. There's an undertow I think it was part of the Stacey Garrity campaign that when she won the state treasurer's race, that no one saw she had no money, but she talked about her Christianity and things like that, and she got a lot of that rural vote. It was like an underground movement there. Jim May, who ran for state representative, also comes from that background of Christian fundamentalism type of stuff. And by the way, I got a message this week that he's maybe interjecting himself in some of the Abington Heights school board decisions. Apparently, there was a teacher who gave an assignment that involved writing an essay about this Southern Poverty Law Center, and he's all hot and bothered about that. You know, remember, that's one of the premier civil rights groups that's fought discrimination over the years, that and the Anti-Defamation League. And he may be going to the school board trying to quash that or somehow. We have to see what happens. That's going to be coming out in the next week or two, I think.
Well, Election Day is Tuesday. We'll have something to talk about that next week. We're done for this week. So I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.